Here's an experiment for you. Take passionate experts in human resource technology. Invite cross-industry experts from inside and outside HR. Mix in what's happening in people analytics today. Give them the technology to connect. Hit record. Pour their discussions into a beaker. Mix thoroughly, and voila, you get the HR Data Labs podcast, where we explore the impact of data and analytics to your business. We may get passionate and even irreverent, but count on each episode challenging and enhancing your understanding of the way people data can be used to solve real-world problems. Now, here's your host, David Turetsky.
Hello and welcome to the HR Data Labs podcast. I'm your host, David Turetsky. As we've been talking from the HR Tech 2023 conference here in Las Vegas, Nevada, I have some of the most brilliant people in the world of HR and HR technology. And today I have with us Kathy Andaris from Burson. How are you?
I'm good, David. Thanks for having me.
It's so exciting. We got to talk to you last year. And in the spirit of last year, we're going to do something a little different from a topic. But first, like we always do, what's one fun thing that no one knows about Kathy?
Wow. You didn't prepare me for that one.
Well, we never do because we want it to be a shock.
Okay. Something that nobody knows about me. It's supposed to be fun, too.
Yes.
Okay.
Fun, yes.
Well, I don't know how fun it is, but I'm actually an excessive marathon runner.
Wow.
I've run over 40 marathons.
Wow.
And for me, that was super fun.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah.
I loved it.
Well, I do 5Ks, but I don't run marathons.
I started with the marathon and then I never stopped.
Really?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Is there anyone in particular that you find the best or you love doing the most?
Boston.
Really?
Of course, Boston.
Really?
Yeah, Boston is the biggest. I mean, it's such a big event.
Sure.
You run the marathon anywhere else. I run it in San Francisco. Nobody even knows if there was a marathon.
Right.
In Boston, like everybody has the day off. Everybody is watching.
It's Patriots Day.
It's Patriots Day. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's a big deal. So I
live two towns over from Hopkinton. So,
oh, really?
Yes. In fact, my kids live in Ashland, which
yes.
goes right through. The marathon goes
that's
through.
Fun.
So next time I'll actually cheer you on.
Oh, well, that will be amazing.
Well, because we have off too, so that's why I can come.
You always have off.
Exactly,
I know. Everybody has off, so it's fun.
The Boston Marathon is also, it has extra meaning now after the bombing.
Yes,
and
of course.
So many people's lives were affected, whether they were there at that moment or they know somebody.
Yes.
And, you know, it's one of those things where if you're from that area, you understand when I say it's got a lot of meaning. And it really changed our perception of being safe in Boston.
Yes, of course. So. Yeah, that was terrible. I was not in that one. Luckily,
okay,
I got a lot of messages, people saying, are you okay?
Yeah.
Are you there? And I'm like, no, I'm not running this year. So,
well, thank goodness.
Thank goodness. So, that was bad.
But the good news is now we know to cheer you on every marathon that we can.
Well, thank you. Okay. Appreciate it.
So, from that perspective, you know, there's obviously a lot going on in the world right now. 2023 has proven to be one of the more challenging, especially in the global scheme of things.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of things going on, not just in terms of business and HR, but in terms of conflict and the economies and recession happening on a global basis and inflation happening on a global basis, as well as interest rates going up on a global basis. What we wanted to try and talk to you about today is what has been happening in the world of HR in 2023 and how that translates to what we might think about what's going to happen in 24 and 25. We're going to ask you to put on your prognostication hat, but first, give us a rundown of what your perspective and what happened with 2023 was.
Well, what happened in 2023? Well, in the world of HR, of course, I mean, the biggest thing, and we're here at the HR Tech Conference, everybody's talking about AI.
Right.
So the AI, the ChatGPT that was introduced last November, I think turned the world of HR upside down and also the world of business upside down.
Absolutely.
Because not just in the world of HR will we see like AI, generative AI, but and also in operational roles, in the actual workflows of every single role that you have in organization, whether that's healthcare or retail or manufacturing, like knowledge workers, software engineers, on and on, right? All of them will actually change with generative AI. So I think that was massive, of course, on the tech side. I think the other thing that, and you mentioned it, is the inflation, like pay levels, expectations for pay really rising. Pay equity, huge theme this year because of all new laws right in Europe and then throughout the US and in Australia even.
Sure.
So pay equity was a big, I think it continues to be a big unsolved problem and topic.
Right.
I think another thing, of course, pay levels, reward systems not really keeping up because organizations just don't know how to make ends meet.
Right.
But neither do people, right? Neither do employees. So
that's
going on too. Of course, labor shortage is actually not declining at all.
Right.
It's getting worse and worse in a way with labor shortage, with inability to recruit, getting the right skills, the whole skill-based, everything keeps getting more urgent for everybody.
Right.
And in the middle of all of that, I think new leadership approaches too, and new organizational models, another thing that's going on, every industry is converging with another industry. It used to be we knew what industry we were in, right? So if you were in healthcare, you knew exactly how to run healthcare and retail. You knew exactly what kind of roles, what kind of jobs, what kind of operating models you had. But now retailers becoming healthcare organizations too.
That's right.
Like
that's
Target is doing general care, right? And physician and all of that. Walmart is doing the same thing.
That's
CVS is doing the same thing.
Right.
So retailers are now becoming healthcare organizations. And of course, that needs completely different skills. Different job models, different operating models.
Right.
And you're also competing on a talent basis, not just with other retailers, but with everybody else. And every company, of course, is now becoming a tech company, right?
Yes.
So you're competing suddenly on all these skills with all the different industries, all the different companies as well.
Right.
So that's going on too.
And what also happened and you mentioned a little bit about this with inflation and with interest rates going up, it really made people second guess investments they had made, which made some areas, some companies challenge the business model that they were in and maybe lay off some employees.
Yes, that too, of course. Yeah, especially the tech industry.
Yeah.
And I think the tech industry was interesting because in a way, I mean, and you know this, they overhired in the pandemic, right?
They did.
So they just amped up, and then suddenly they said, oh my God, we have all these people that are working on stuff we don't even know what they're working
on.
And then now they got to narrow down. So it's kind of this, like the opposite of being a dynamic and flexible organization if you just grow through hiring.
Right.
And that's what they did. They just grew through hiring. They didn't put flexible models into place where they said, maybe we need to hire all these people. Maybe we get contractors in until we know we want to invest in this kind of area.
Right, exactly.
And then they wouldn't have to let go of so many people either.
And what was amazing was, because this didn't really happen very much in the past, for many companies that had actually gone through those contractions, they also weren't hiring at large levels as well.
Yeah.
Whereas you see a lot of these companies, they're hiring in other areas, and it begs the question, why don't you just reskill the people that you were hired and not just throw them all out and then still keep recruiting for those other roles?
Exactly. You know, it's so true. And that actually goes with one big theme that we see for 2023, but really also going into 2024, 2025, is how HR operates, right?
Exactly.
Because when HR operates in a more integrated way, when you think, well, maybe growing is not just recruiting, right? Maybe we look at the skills we need, the skills that we have.
Right.
And maybe we can, to your point, we can reskill some people. Maybe we can move some people around. Maybe we can do more project-based work.
Right.
And maybe we can also retain some people more so, rather than trying to grow through recruiting alone.
Right. Do you think it might be because they don't have the career frameworks and understand the skills necessary and understand the skill libraries or the skill areas or the skill resources that they actually have currently? Is it maybe because of lack of the information necessary?
I think so. I think the whole skill-based organization is such a big buzzword. Every company says they want to move there, but a lot of them just stop with just creating a taxonomy, right? Or they're trying to boil the ocean, right? They say, oh, we need all the skills in the entire organization.
Right.
Well, if you do that, right, I mean, you just start inventorizing and then you keep going on it.
Exactly.
But you don't do anything with it.
Right.
So the real thing about skill-based organization in my mind is not just getting an inventory, but actually what are you trying to accomplish?
Right.
Are you trying to figure out a skill gap, a capability gap, a talent gap in one area, right? So if you're a software organization, for example, a tech company, you might say, oh, we need more AI people probably,
right?
Or data people, analytics people, data science people, and maybe we need less mainframe people or whatever,
right?
Or old school legacy framework systems, but maybe you can reskill them.
Exactly. And that's why it kind of mystifies me that they don't look at what the potential could be for just taking those people who they actually probably still like want to have them stick around, but they're getting rid of them because they just don't see the potential for that reskilling.
Yeah, no, it's so true. It's so true. And I mean, they're losing so much intellectual capital because they know their internal processes, they know the culture, they know have relationships. They probably have relationship with customers, with suppliers, with vendors, like all of those kind of things you lose when you just say, oh, we just don't need these people anymore.
And I'm not trying to be emotive when I say this because, you know, people say that business, there's no place for emotion in business, which is horseshit. But but really, it's that empathy or the lack thereof that a company doesn't look at their current resources and go, no, we can cut 10% of that's fine. It's not a problem. This is business. It's not personal. It's bullshit.
It's personal for every person, right?
Exactly. I mean, and they have to go home and they have to tell their family, well, I lost my job. Well, how are we going to make ends meet? Well, I don't know. We'll have to go on public assistance.
Yeah.
I mean, so many people are living paycheck to paycheck that the contemplation of a layoff should be the last resort any company takes.
Absolutely.
And okay, I'm on a soapbox now.
But. I'm with you there. Obviously, I'm European, right? So I'm against layoffs altogether. I don't think they're... I mean, unless the business would collapse, otherwise this should be the very, very last thing you think about. And I think in Europe, because you can't just give people a kick in the in the back and 2 weeks later they're out.
Right.
They think about it much better and they care much more about finding a place where people actually can be high performing.
Exactly.
Right? So you got to be much more intentional about it because it's not possible. And like I did actually decades ago when I was in consulting, worked with a client on a very large workforce reduction program. Sadly, we didn't recommend who it was, but we got the cost base across all of the European countries. And wide variation. In Greece, for example, it costs like $2,000 to lay somebody off. In Belgium, $600,000 for somebody who makes $60,000 a year.
Wow.
Like, well, so I mean, you better think about it.
Exactly. And but that also brings up a point, which I think I had a conversation with someone a few days ago about this, which says that, you know, you brought up it should be the last resort. Well, what if we held the CEO's feet to the fire and said that if you do a layoff, that means you either need to take a pay reduction or you don't get your bonus that year.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly right. Because in the end of the day, it's not on the people, right? It's never on the employees because if it's a riff, it's not about performance, right? It's about
the
CEO wasn't performing really well.
Well, or yeah, I mean, they may have made a mistake going into that business the timing was wrong or they underperformed. Well, you know, line of sight says that it goes from the top down then in case of failure. So,
I think it's so true. I think it's so true. And I think that's that mindset of thinking about all the HR disciplines more in a holistic, we call that systemic way, is really where HR needs to go now. There's no other way than doing this. So, I mean, most HR organizations still operate very much in silos, right?
Yes, they do.
There's people on the LICS people. Here's the comp people. Here's the talent acquisition people. Here's the L&D people. Here's the leadership development people, the employee experience, the like DEI people, on and on and on.
Right.
But none of these things you can solve in a silo. Like not even recruiting you can't solve in a silo because sometimes you can't recruit anybody, right? So you got to think about internally. Maybe
recruiting needs to go to compensation and get what's the latest range.
Of course, exactly. Yeah. And like if you say, well, we're just growing through recruiting alone, it's in this labor market also, it's not going to work. It's just not going
to
work.
Well, no, especially from the fact that the recruiters need to get direction from someone. Maybe it's from the hiring manager. The hiring manager had approval for hiring those resources. Well, where did they get it from? You know, have they created that plan, that workforce plan? Are they following the plan? Are there exceptions to the plan? There are so many checks that need to be created in terms of hiring that one person. Why aren't there the other way around of when you're letting a group go?
Oh, that's true. Checks too. That's
sorry,
true.
Sorry, go back on that. But
I totally agree. I mean, that you mentioned they were getting kind of direction from the hiring manager. And I think what's also happening, which is true, of course, most recruiters don't dare push back, right? When the hiring manager say, oh, I need to hire these 10 people, they don't ask, oh, let's talk about each of these roles.
Right.
Do they have to be full-time roles? Could they be maybe project-based and first? Or like you cannot get anybody with these skill sets in this location. There's no way because we know for a fact it doesn't exist in this location.
Right.
So like being much more of a talent advisor and much less of an order taker from like the hiring manager to say, oh, just go out and recruit these people, right? So
right. And then you know, we talked a little bit about this before, talent pools, building talent pools, whether it's inside the organization or stoking the community to try and find those skills, whether they exist here or wherever.
Yes, exactly.
And being able to keep them warm so when you need to hire for those types of skills, they're available for you.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, I think that skill-based workforce planning is still something hardly anybody's doing, honestly. But I think more and more it has to come because most of the workforce plans that you have are headcount plans, really.
Yes.
Like, oh, finance approved, I get three
That's
people,
right.
So now I got to get three people.
Right.
But finance doesn't care about skills, right?
No.
And so how you get the skills could be many different ways. It could be three full-time resources. It could be six contractors. It
right.
could be 20 projects that you do just internally with like internal resources. So that like headcount planning really doesn't work anymore for this world where you don't know what the jobs are, what the roles are, what the work is, what the skills are that you need to have.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure you never miss a show by clicking subscribe. This podcast is made possible by salary.com. Now back to the show.
What does that evolve to? What does that become? Is that where we're going to need the AI overlords to be able to help us understand how we're going to take all the big data of where do those skills exist and find those diamonds in the rough and
absolutely.
Able to help us uncover them?
Absolutely. I think the talent intelligence systems, and there's several of them here. Obviously,
yeah.
we're looking at one of them. Beamery is one of them, or
yeah.
Eightfold, or
right.
Phenom, or like Gloat, and to some respect, like some of the recruiting related talent intelligence
right.
systems, they already know, like they know what's outside, but then they also know what's inside, right? So
right.
comparing that outside world with the inside world on a skills basis, and then also seeing competitive intelligence to see, okay, so if your competitors are hiring, maybe just have that kind of skill set in, for
right.
example, we worked with a pharma company, a very large pharma company on their R&D, of course, because R&D is the biggest
sure.
thing, of course,
pharma
in pharma.
Yep.
And they saw that their competitors were hiring for also had completely different skill sets in R&D, like next generation skill sets. And they still had the legacy, like just drug development, versus
right.
others had actually, like sometimes pharma doesn't even just create pharmaceuticals anymore. They
no.
create games, for example, for lazy eye or something like that,
oh,
right?
Wow,
so
yeah.
there were different interventions that had
right.
nothing to do with actual pharma, right?
right
so
right.
just treating diseases without
right.
having you to take a pill or something
oh,
like
sure.
that. So then you need completely different skills. So they were able to see, actually, they had still the legacy skill sets.
Right.
And so that then you could say, oh, maybe we should also look more for that kind of skill set.
Right.
And then you could say, oh, maybe we have people that are already kind of close in our area that we could reskill them, upskill them, and then move
right.
them over there.
Right.
So we don't have to just like throw it all out and build it all anew from scratch.
But is that a function of their HRIT? Is that a function of their workforce planning efforts? Where does that kind of lie? Who has the responsibility for being able to point that stuff out? Because who owns that workforce planning? Who is the person who's responsible?
It's interesting. I think most organizations don't do this at all, right?
Yeah.
Most, like maybe 5 to 10% of companies do this well.
Right.
Most companies are still, like they don't have any, to your point, they don't have any insights on what skills they have, what skills they need, what
right.
skills are available outside. Because they all go by jobs,
right?
right? They don't break
right.
it down
sure.
into skills. But those that do, I think there's some of them have like strategic workforce planning groups. Some of them make this part of the HR business partner role, like the consultant role, working,
sure.
of course, with the talent intelligence. I don't think HRIT would be the right place because they're
definitely
just
not.
Doing the
yeah.
plumbing, right?
Yeah, they're just trying to keep the wheels on the
exactly,
bus.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly. So, but I think it's a very forward-looking strategic thing. Some groups that we talked with, they have an HR planning and strategy group
oh, okay.
that actually does that. And then works with the business partners who are assigned to these business areas to consult with their business leaders on how to go about that in a very strategic way, obviously. So it's not just handing over, here's my plan, and you just go out and recruit. They're like, okay, what are you trying to accomplish? What
right.
capabilities are you trying to build?
Right.
How can we help you do this?
Are those relatively new groups within companies? And who do you see? Do you see the pharma? Do you see other like software or technology companies? Who's actually leading in that kind of space?
Yeah, I mean, it is, to your first question, it is very new. I think most companies, very few companies have a talent intelligence COE
right.
or something
right.
like that.
Yes.
But most don't. But I think a lot of companies are waking up to the fact that they have to do something and like much more agile, dynamic workforce planning and workforce strategy and all of that around it. And so I think from a vendor perspective, it's the talent intelligence vendors really that best in this space. And if you listen to Josh's keynote today, he was talking about these are the second generation AI companies. So these are new companies that were actually built on AI. Yeah. They are not transactional system and you put AI on top of it, which like the HCM systems are and all that, which is great. Of course, you still need your HCM, but they're data systems. They're big data systems that were built on data and AI. So you're not trying to make them transactional systems. You trust the AI to actually predict and get all these skills together, because without AI, it's impossible to capture all of this. It's moving too fast. And if you're trying to move, like do that manually, you're never going to get done.
No, you're never going to. But you also then have to have your leadership trust.
Of course.
That's going to drive change in the organization and that they have to embrace it, because they're giving the AI overlords a lot of power in that case to predict our future.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, of course, you still want to have the humans to decide on it, right? You will never say, oh, here's the AI-generated workforce plan, because...
Right. Hey, it's been designed for you. We sent it to your email.
Just
click approve and we're going to go to that.
Just approve and then we're going to recruit all these people and retain all these people and reskill all these people.
Right.
Exactly. But that's why I think the consultative mindset and the consultative skill set of the HR people that are going to sit with the business leaders now and talk with them very strategically about... what are we trying to accomplish? What's the problem we're trying to solve? And then work with them on how to create that plan.
But Kathy, now we're talking about HR and we're talking about very different skills that our HR business partners and our HR leaders have to have.
Yes.
They've never had to, basically work with this kind of technology before.
Yeah.
We've always tangentially had some of this stuff. I mean, not AI, but we've always had some kind of technology. I'm not going to mention the name of the company, but I mean, we're talking about back in the 80s and early 90s when a computer didn't exist in the HR world,
yes,
right?
Yes, of course.
So this is new stuff for us. Who and how can start to acquire those skills in the HR world?
Yeah.
Is it really the generalists? Is it the people who in OD? Who is it that have to do that?
Yes and yes. It could be the HR business partners. It could be the people in OD. It could be people in talent management. I think different organizations will have different groups that naturally lend themselves to that work. And of course, you're going to upskill them and reskill them to be data savvy, to be more consultative. I think the consulting mindset is so key.
But they have not had that skill either. It's been, I can't say that of everybody, but having a consultative mindset means that you have that relationship with the business.
That's right.
And that you have all the tools and the data you need in
order
to be able to do that.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, what we are seeing, and we are actually publishing a very big study on what we call systemic HR.
Yeah.
We're seeing the best HR functions function like consulting firms.
Yes.
Not like product companies, not like service delivery or support functions or cost centers. They are really like consulting organizations. Very flat, very agile teams, problem aligned, consultative, obviously, also data-based. And I started my career in management consulting. So you did nothing, of course, without data, because the client said, well, where's the data?
How do you back this up? Gut feel?
Exactly. In God we trust, everybody else bring data, right?
That's a good one. I like that one. But the CFO world has been living this for years.
Oh, yeah.
Decades, right?
Absolutely.
And they have rules around it, like, all the FASB rules or the GAAP rules. We're still a little bit behind that. I mean, we have the pay transparency laws and other things and tons of regulation.
Yeah, yeah.
But what else is going to drive this? Is it just the technology that's going to drive it?
Oh,
is it the need? Is it the skill?
Yeah.
What's going to drive it?
I don't think the technology will drive it. I think the technology will enable it.
Okay.
I think the need is driving it. And the need is driving it because the problems we have to solve in HR are so much more complex than just 10 years ago.
Yes.
I mean, if you think about what HR was doing 10 years ago.
Even three years ago, before the
pandemic. And now we're dealing not just with all the pandemic stuff, but hybrid work and well-being and mental health and diversity and like pay equity, all these things that were not even topics before. Now we do have to do all of them.
Workplace violence.
And workplace violence.
Never had, 10 years ago, who thought that we'd have this level of workplace violence?
Absolutely, absolutely. And so all of these topics, there's no other way than if you want to solve these problems. And the business is looking to HR to solve this problem. Another huge problem that I think in HR have a huge opportunity to solve, and only HR can do it, is solving for introducing AI into the organization itself. Not in HR, which is another use case, but in the workflows of every single person in the organization. Because that's going to impact transforming all the roles, all the jobs, all the skills, operating models, management models. And who else can do it? IT won't do that. IT will put the ChatGPT or whatever you're going to use out there.
Right.
But they're not going to transform the work.
Right.
So
my thought is on this, and I love your reaction to it. If HR got out of the administration way and enabled AI to do a lot of the workflow and education on simple questions, what's the hiring range for this job? I want to hire this job. Can you help me with that? I need time off approval for this stuff.
Yeah.
Why is HR getting in the way of that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the HR technology has been trying to get it out of the way from employee self-service tools that have been on mobile phones. But if you had the ability to chat to a thing, like in your phone, and say, hey, I want a time off request for, or I want to ask these staff when they're going to take their time off requests. Can you go poll them and find out when they're going to take their vacations this year?
Right.
We don't have people like secretaries or administrative assistants to go do that anymore.
That's right.
Why can't we have the AI do that?
Oh, and you can. I mean, I was actually at Talent Connect last week in New York, and Donna Morris, who is the CHRO of Walmart, she presented what they have done with generative AI, where they actually did exactly what you just
said.
That's awesome. For all 1 million people here in the U.S., and they all gave them a company phone.
Wow.
And you can ask it anything, and it doesn't just tell you how to do it. It actually does it for you, too. So you say, I want a PTO. I want to take PTO from October 20th to 31st. Then it's going to say, okay, great. I put this in review for the system. Should I submit it? It submits it, right? It does it for you, too.
Wow.
So which is, and it took them only 90 days to build this, is what she said.
Are you serious?
Took them 90 days to build this. So they built it on top of all the, because everyone, like Workday builds something on Workday, right? And everybody builds it on their own thing. But she wanted something that's on top of all of the transactions, not within each system, because otherwise you have all these chatbots that you have to still go to different places, right?
You talked about silos before.
Exactly.
There are silos.
Those silos, right? Yeah. Because in this one, in that chatbot, you can also say things like, I want a PTO day to, I need to hire somebody in this location.
Right.
And then it's going to say, okay, let's open the requisition for you write the job description and everything else. Or I need to do a performance review. It helps you with that too. Like whatever, right? So.
But the AI then needs to figure out, are we going to have issues with overtime? Because now, because of the scheduling issues, we're coming up with conundrums. And I need to then show the management that there's going to be 5 people who are going to have to work overtime.
Yes.
Because we won't be able to hire in time for that person to go out on leave. So those kind of things kind of generate that next generation of problem and the next generation generation.
That's right.
And it causes kind of a cavalcade of solving business problems and workflows. If HR can get out of that way, like Walmart, you're saying Walmart has, that would just be phenomenal for us. Then we could be that consultant that you talked about before.
Exactly. And it would still not do it by itself, right? And you'd still have to upskill and reskill and break down silos, but at least you would be not burdened with all of these administrative, no value add tasks, because the system can do this much faster, better, cheaper, right?
Exactly.
Without errors and without like having to call somebody.
Right.
And you can do it even voice-based, right? So a shop floor worker in Walmart can talk into their phone, right? And just basically
All the context to know who that person is, who they report to and all
you
that stuff.
You don't have to enter any of this. It knows exactly who you are.
And make a ton of different errors by entering that form.
Exactly. And then you have to look up the job codes or the location codes or whatever you have,
right?
It knows all of this. And then it can suggest other things that you might want to do too, right? So you can tell, can I help you with this stuff? Can I help you with this stuff? Because usually people do these kind of transactions after they do this kind of thing.
That's right.
So it learns a lot on this. And it took them so short, right?
That's amazing.
That's the amazing thing that I think with generative AI especially, how quickly it has evolved into something that's really useful while it's still being updated constantly as well.
And this topic is so brand new. It sounds strange to say this, but in 2025, we may listen to this, Kathy, and say, oh boy,
we didn't know anything.
So right. we were so naive when we said that.
This is,
Think about what the world is today. And yes. You know, I'm hoping that that's a good thing, by the way, not a, oh wow, we never got anywhere near that.
Well, that could be true, because you always overestimate the change that's happening in the short term, and you underestimate the change that's going to happen in the long term, right? So we think next year it's going to be so much further along. Maybe it's not going to be that much further along, but maybe in 10 years, probably it's going to be somewhere where we can't even imagine at all.
Well, the one thing I'm hoping and I'm praying is that legislatures across this country don't make the stupid move of trying to regulate ChatGPT and generative AI out of the business world before we even understand what it could do.
I think it would be a big mistake, because the opportunities are endless, and the opportunities to make work better too are endless, right? It takes care of all the things that nobody wants to do anyway. And it makes us all, as Josh said, super workers, right? It makes us all like Superman, because we know so many things.
But they're so ignorant of any of that. And I'm not trying to broad brush and, you know, say every legislator is. Yeah. But the people who are opening up their mouths and talking about making legislation on this right now are saying this is a movie that we've seen the ending of before, and it's not a good one. And, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I hear you. I'm always a positive person. I'm an optimist. So I think it will happen, and it will happen actually to things that we don't even know how good they're going to be.
Right.
I think the whole... I know a lot of HR people are afraid too. They're afraid because they don't understand it.
Yeah.
They're afraid it's going to take their jobs. They're in over their head.
Right.
I think it's going to make jobs just better. And every time we've seen any of these things, jobs were not destroyed. Jobs were created, right? Better jobs were created. Every time we had like a big step change in technology, jobs were created.
Hey, are you listening to this and thinking to yourself, man, I wish I could talk to David about this? Well, you're in luck. We have a special offer for listeners of the HR Data Labs podcast, a free half-hour call with me about any of the topics we cover on the podcast or whatever is on your mind. Go to salary.com/HRDL consulting to schedule your free 30-minute call today.
You want to know the one thing that I could agree with that might be a concern, and that's velocity. Work used to be a lot slower. Technology enabled us to go faster. Now the technology that can take all these other things off our plate enable us to go even faster.
That's true.
And so AI doesn't have to take a break. AI doesn't have to take a rest. AI is now going to be waiting for us to make decisions. And so the pace of change and the pace of decisions are going to go much more rapid.
Yes.
And we're going to have to up our game. Maybe it's Red Bull. Maybe it's coffee. I don't know.
I don't do any of these.
I don't either.
I can't.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is that because the state of a computer is always in a, I'm ready to process now, let me process. But humans are not. We're going to have to build in those gaps into those technologies, or... I can understand why people might be afraid of AI making them go way faster than they're used to.
I get this, but I don't think AI will change this. I mean, this is already what it is today,
right?
Every time you get like 15 emails and 20 pings and WhatsApp and Slack and Teams and all of that. And do you have to respond to all of this? No, but we put this on ourselves.
Exactly.
So I think we have to take that pause ourselves and say, and I think that's why people are so burned out. That's why people are so stressed out, because it's constant now. I mean, you know this, like in the 80s or 90s,
there was
no email, right? You couldn't take your work home, right? You couldn't,
that's true.
Like, it was
there were barely laptops, and the laptops were like 15, 20 pounds.
Exactly. Oh, you had a desktop, right?
That's
you couldn't, like nobody had a cell phone. Of course, you didn't even have a cell phone. It wasn't even possible, right?
And we don't even have legislation right now that covers that those working hours that we're working that are beyond the office
on
our cell phones and whatnot.
That's right.
And
so the always on is already happening all the time. But yet the 4-day work week actually is coming more and more into play, right? So maybe 4-day work week is going to, maybe the one way to think about the AI is it could free us up to only work 4 days a week.
Okay, Kathy, you're like me. Tell me there's a time on the weekend where you don't get an email or you don't get a text message or you don't get that, I have an idea. and we work on it right then.
Of course not.
Of
but
course.
It's because I want to, right? Not right. because I have to.
But
because I love it.
But that makes this even worse because we love working, even though we love life and we want to take advantage of our kids when they're young and things like that. We love working, and for a lot of us, this is going to burn us out just much faster.
I don't know. I think the burnout is happening for people who don't love their job, and there's way more people who don't love their job than like us, right?
Yes, that's true. 90%
of the population kind of despises work. They'd rather not work than work. You and I are different,
that's
right? And a lot of people that we know are different, but if you think about the general population, most of them say, oh, I hate my job. Every day I dread going there.
That's
I can't wait to come home. That's not how we wired. So I think the people that get burned out are the people that don't do it because they love it, but because they have to, right?
But we've seen epiphanies like the pandemic, where we had the Great Awakening or the Great Resignation or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, all the great ones.
Well, the great ones, right. Well, the great ones had really bad outcomes, which I don't know why they were so great.
Which is great, but it wasn't that great.
Not great for us. But what they did was it exposed that they were in, pardon the expression, shit jobs.
Yes.
And they looked around, they went, wait a minute. There's a job that's over here where I don't have to clean bedpans. I don't have to watch people die every day.
Yes.
I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. And I can get paid basically the same and have a better life. Well, that epiphany is going to happen more to knowledge workers than to the skilled workers.
That's
right. And it's going to start getting into that. And with the demographic bubble of the baby boomers starting to retire or retiring en masse, aren't we going to see that a lot of the knowledge worker gaps that exist today just get exacerbated even worse?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But that's where AI has a huge opportunity too. Because if you don't have enough people, right, how are you going to fill up that gap?
That's true.
You can have AI do a lot of the job, but only if you redesign the work. That's why we're coming back, that redesigning the work, not just HR stuff, but actual work, every single job, is a huge opportunity. And using AI to fill workforce gaps, because then you need less people. We did a big study on healthcare, we launched actually last year in the healthcare industry, and we predicted that there's going to be a nursing shortage in the U.S.
Of course.
Of 2.1 million people,
which
is every third nursing job will be empty. We did that on a lot of data.
With increasing demand for the aging population.
And so what we then did too is like, how is that gap even fillable? And if you try just recruiting, you go 10 to 15% of that, right? You
can,
because there's not that many people who want to be nurses. You can't, even if you recruit all of them, like there's just not that many. Only 200,000 a year graduate from nursing schools, right? So recruiting goes a little bit of a way. Then we said retention, retaining people who otherwise would leave the industry or leave your organization goes another 15% of that big gap. So it goes a little bit more. Then we say reskilling. So basically upskilling, reskilling people that are non-clinical jobs into clinical jobs takes some time, right?
It takes
years, but then you have them.
And licensure.
And exactly. But that's even a little bit bigger of the gap, like maybe 20%. But the rest of it is only closable if you redesign work, use AI, technology,
automation,
or team-based work models, non-clinical people basically to do that too. So all of these like redesign things, almost 50% of that gap, needing less of them.
Wow.
Otherwise, you can't do it. So
it makes it untenable.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a huge opportunity. And I expect it's going to be the same in many other disciplines too.
Right.
I mean, because you see the shortages, of course, in like airline workers, for example, flight attendants, whatever, like hospitality, everywhere.
Yes.
Really, you have the workforce like gaps as well. How are you going to fill them? You can't just fill them with people. There's just not enough people.
And immigration policies are being what they are.
That too.
We're actually seeing the available workforce that we used to have is constrained even further.
It's very true, especially in the jobs that, quite frankly, many Americans wouldn't want to do anyway, right? And then how are you going to... Yeah, I know we get into politics.
But here's a simple non-political one. On Cape Cod, we used to be able to hire lifeguards to be able to fill all the pools and all of the needs of all the camps that existed. Well, what happened? Well, after the pandemic, a lot of those people couldn't come back. And then a lot of the real estate got so expensive out on the Cape that we couldn't hire people with the right rates because we couldn't afford to put them anywhere.
Oh.
And so a lot of those pools shut down or had to have limited hours because you could only hire a lifeguard for a limited period of time. a lot of the business models of the camps had to change because they got so expensive.
Sure.
So it literally changed the way we live, because not only couldn't we hire those people from abroad, we couldn't get them here. We couldn't keep them.
Yes.
And so it wasn't just about not being able to bring people in.
Yeah.
Because we weren't allowed to bring them in.
Yeah.
But we weren't allowed to hold them or host them in that area.
Wow. I mean, and it's, all of these things are so multidimensional, right? It's not.
And you can't automate that, by the way.
You can't. Well, no, you can't automate that.
No, lifeguards, no.
That is very true. And I mean, you can't automate the nurse job either, but you can automate parts of it, right?
Yes.
And so then you need less nurses.
Right.
Or you can.
Or the administrative pieces of the nurse's job could be.
Also, patient flows, right? Where nurses should go. All of that can be AI. Medication robots have been in place for decades. But then we had a great story when we did the healthcare study. It wasn't that great. It was just like almost fascinating when we talked about how you redesign the work. And they said, well, it's interesting because we've had medication robots that IT deployed, but you couldn't put them, their alleys were too narrow. So they wouldn't fit through. So they're just standing in a corner and we're not using them. Because IT said, I'm done. We deployed the robots, right? And nobody is accountable for redesigning the layout of the hospital. So now you can't use, now the nurses still have to do medication, although robots do it better, faster, cheaper, of course.
Well, with less shortage or shrinkage.
With exactly. And usually no room for error, right?
But
like the things that you can't automate, to your point, of course, is the bedside, right? It's still like somebody caring for you.
Right.
Nobody wants to say, well, I was only seen by a robot, right? Especially when you're not feeling well and all of that.
Maybe you could program a robot to have as much empathy as a nurse. I doubt it. Nurses love their patients.
Oh, they love their patients. Exactly.
But there's that physical touch.
Empathy.
Empathy, exactly.
Yeah. But can you support the nurses with a robot? Absolutely, right?
Of course.
And can you support them also with non-clinical people that maybe when somebody gets sick do clean up or something
exactly.
like that? We found out in the healthcare study, which
for hospitals.
Roomba or the Zumba is actually the scrubbing thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I
thought it was just a dance.
Zumba is also a dance. We have one of these scrubbers at home too.
Right.
But nurses, what we found out when we studied healthcare, they only work at top of license, which is a concept basically to do only the work that they're uniquely qualified to do.
Right.
50-60% of their time. Everything else they do 40-50% of that time to do stuff that somebody else could do, a machine could do, like somebody lower skilled.
You're paying them a lot of money to do shitty stuff.
Paying them a lot of money, and it's burning them out, of course. Yeah. They don't want to be there anymore because it's stressful, it's hard, it's physically demanding.
Oh, yeah, especially when you double shift them constantly.
When you double shift them, exactly. Yeah. So I think and that happens in every profession, right? Every profession has these opportunities to say, how can we use the talent and the people that we have to the top of their license, to the top of their capabilities, their skills.
And I think, Kathy, that's a great place to end it, because all we're going to see in a couple years, did we heed that? And are we going to use that really sage advice to treat people at the top of their license?
That's right.
Cool.
I love it.
Kathy, thank you so much for being on the HR Data Labs podcast.
Thank you, David. I could have talked for another few hours.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. Take care and stay safe.
That was the HR Data Labs podcast. If you liked the episode, please subscribe. And if you know anyone that might like to hear it, please send it their way. Thank you for joining us this week, and stay tuned for our next episode. Stay safe.